At this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Chuck.
Absolute pleasure to be here with you tonight. Absolute honor. I just hope this helps. So welcome. Let's go. So my experience is this. I used to drink a lot. A lot. I've been clean and sober for 16 months now. I'm approaching my 17 month milestone. Thank you. I love to keep up with the guys. I've never shared that before, but that was one of my favorite things is like drinking with the boys. Shot for shot. Beer pong for beer pong game, I would just keep going. And I love the look on people's faces when they would realize that I could keep up for a little while. I just loved that. So eventually this led to blackouts pretty much every time. And I didn't think it was a problem. I hung out with people who told me this was normal. So I kept doing it. I loved the way it made me feel. Hangovers were horrible. They would last a couple of days, and I'm so thankful I don't have to go through that anymore. Interestingly, this wasn't in the script, but someone texted me today, wanted to reach out. It was the last person I drank with, and he's like passing through the area. I had to call my sponsor today and tell her what had happened, and I didn't go and hang out with him, but it was just kind of interesting timing that happened. Anyways, the hangovers that I would get were never until the next night. I would drink so much that I would wake up still drunk, and then I would get a hangover the next night, which then lasted for like a day or two. So after I start like also puking, I stopped doing that. I don't know if anybody else had that experience, but like I wasn't rejecting the alcohol anymore. My body would just hold on to it, and I would just get hungover a couple days after, but it would last a couple days. So, in 2016, I quit my corporate job to travel, and now I could party and drink and smoke as much as I wanted, whenever I wanted. I didn't have one of those pesky jobs to have to report to, and I was living what I thought was my dream. I thought I was just going to travel for a couple of months, like 2 or 3 months adventure. But that just snowballed, and I ended up on the road living in my car for about 5 years before I made it here. And the end of it was it wasn't an adventure by any means. It was like, I was obviously desperate. That's what I got here. I had several run-ins with the police before I moved into my car and after I lived in my car, but by the grace of God, I have never been busted. Thank God I've never been arrested. There have been several really close calls. The only time I've ever been breathalyzed, I actually wasn't drinking that day. It was like a miracle. So I have learned a lot from your stories. I really appreciate the honesty that you all come to these meetings with, because I know that it's just a matter of time before something like that happens. We can't play the odds like that forever. So when I got here, I was in total denial. I did not think that I had a drinking problem when I came to my first AA meeting. I thought I had a marijuana problem. But someone who has been in the program for many, many years, you all probably know her. Her name is Nikki. I went to her in total overwhelm 3 weeks after I got into her program. Well, I'm jumping forward a little bit. Let me just tell you how I got there. So I ended up in my car and totally desperate for anything different. I couldn't get a job. I was completely broke. It's not that I couldn't get a job. I didn't have the clarity to like be able to do the things that were required to get a job. And some other things had happened that I was totally confused about. I had no clarity at all about what had happened. And I put myself in a really compromising position, many compromising positions, like too many to be able to make any sense of. So, in fact, my life had become completely unmanageable. But again, I didn't have a drinking problem at that time. I just couldn't stop smoking pot. And I really believed that. So, anyways, it was all about what other people had done to me, and those who knew me when I first came in can testify. I had a really good story, and it was all true, but it was all about what other people did to me. It had nothing to do with the position that I had put myself in. So flash forward, I finally started asking for help because I was so overwhelmed and I didn't want to die. Like, I didn't want to kill myself, but I didn't want to live anymore. So that being said, I had never been to that point where, like, I didn't want to live anymore. And it's like, okay, if I don't want to live anymore, what does that mean? And if I don't trust myself right now and I don't know how to move forward, then what am I supposed to do? And I've heard, like, so many public service announcements growing up, and thank God, like, throughout my younger years, about, like, call a hotline. If you have a problem, ask for help. And so I didn't know what my problem was. I just knew that I had a problem. So I picked up the phone. I started calling hotlines, and I finally asked for help. And it took several days. Actually, I tried to go to a shelter 2 months before I actually ended up in a shelter, but they wouldn't take me because I hadn't updated my driver's license to be California. It was still Arizona. So they turned me away. And for 2 months, I stayed on the road in my car, getting high, taking stuff that I didn't even know what it was from strangers. And so finally, I pick up the phone. I didn't go into a shelter. I pick up the phone and I call the hotline, and they couldn't help me, but they gave me a number of someone who might be able to help me. So I called them. They couldn't help me, so I had to call someone. They couldn't help me, and by then, I was too overwhelmed. I was getting stoned to be able to cope with what was going on, and then it was the next day. And so I had to repeat this over, and I just kept calling people, and I kept getting transferred, and called the next person. Same thing that whole day. It took me 3 days to finally get to the point where I was on the phone with someone, totally overwhelmed, totally frustrated, because I was like, I'm doing what I've been taught to do. Like, I'm actually finally asking for help, and nobody can help me. They just keep transferring me. Like, what? I couldn't go to the shelter. Nobody's helping me. And so finally, someone asked me the same question that several people had asked before, that, what's your name? What's your birthday? And I was so overwhelmed, I couldn't even answer the question. I was bawling, like, driving, I just wanted help. And I couldn't answer the question. And they could hear my panic, I guess, and they said, are you in crisis? And I was like, yes! Like, yelling at them. No, I'm in crisis! So, thank God, like, that's just what it took for me to be sent to the appropriate resource to be able to help. I put myself on a voluntary 23-hour hold because I didn't know what I was going to do, and so I just said, please help me, and if this is what I have to do, this is what I'm going to do. So they observed me. I slept in, like, the most uncomfortable bed I've ever slept in my life. It was the night before. Like, a therapist came out and asked me a bunch of questions. I talked with him for a couple hours. And he said there was a program in Santa Maria. I was up in SLO when this happened. So he said, there's a program in Santa Maria. We have a place for you to go, but you have to be clean and sober. And I had just taken, like, an edible from someone. I didn't even know who they were, and it had, like, mushrooms in it the day before. But I was so ready. I was, like, ready. So I said, okay, I'll go. So that's how I ended up in the shelter that I started out in. And that was my first day. That was April Fool's Day, interestingly enough, was the day that I ended up in the crisis stabilization unit, but I used that day. So April 2nd of 2021 was the day that I actually got. That was my first full day. I'm at the shelter now, and 3 weeks in, which is the longest I've ever been, I had tried to get sober so many times. Like, I thought when I came into this program and started hearing your stories about relapse, I thought, well, maybe I could just avoid that altogether if I just stay sober. But no, it is part of my story. I just didn't realize it until I'd been here long enough. I tried to get sober so many times before I made it to this program. So I can't even tell you how many times I tried to make 30 days. Never made it longer than 3 weeks. Not a single time. I never made that 30-day goal. So, as one might expect, 3 weeks into my time at the shelter, first shelter that I started at, I was going nuts. Like, I was a basket case. I was totally fine, totally normal. Like, I'm digging being clean and sober the first couple weeks, and then that last week, especially 3 weeks in, I'm, like, wanting to rip my face off. I'm wanting to fight people. Like, I'm wanting to run away and just get the heck out of there. But thank God I talked to somebody about it. I didn't just run away. And I didn't have this program yet. I'd never been to a meeting before. But I started talking to Nikki about what I was going through, crying. I wasn't just talking to her. I was bawling. And she tried to explain, I just can't stay here anymore. I don't know what's going on. She's heard it all before. She's seen it. She's seen it a million times. So she says to me in that moment, do you want to go to a meeting? And I was like, I thought she was making a work reference. And I was like, I don't want to go work right now. Like, I want to run away right now. I have no clue. And so she's like, let's go look at the calendar. And we, like, went over, and my car, like, was not operable. One of my tires was flat. I had to, like, use my air compressor to put air in my tire every time I drove it at this point. And so anyways, I used the transportation from the house to get to my first meeting at the park, the park meeting. And I'm going to put Leo on blast here for a second. The first meeting, I asked him if this was okay too, by the way. So my first meeting ever, I show up. I'm like super timid. I think I'm going to bail. Like, I don't think I'm going to stick around, but I just wanted to give it a shot. I was just curious as to what was this going to be. And so I show up. I'm sitting by a tree at the park on the ground. And he comes up with his chair. He's like, hey, everybody, is there going to be a meeting here? And I was like, oh, terrified of Leo. I didn't know if he was a stranger or, like, part of the meeting or what. I had no idea. And I didn't even know that he was going to take a chip tonight, but it worked out. Like, that's God right there. But I wanted to tell a story about Leo, and it happened to be his birthday. So, anyways, that was one of my first... you know, I'm trying to figure this thing out. Like, what is this thing? But he was really happy. He was really happy. And so I listened. So actually, my first meeting, I was asked to read one of the readings, and I had no idea of what it was going to say. They were just like, you want to read this? And I did, and I couldn't get through it without crying. It was just like, what has my life come to right now? Like, I'm in an AA meeting, and I'm reading this thing, and this is all resonating with me, but I'm not an alcoholic, right? I just can't stop smoking weed. And so, but I've got tears rolling down my face, and so, anyways, I listened. I don't even remember if I shared at my first meeting or if I just listened, but I continued to come back. And I continued listening to the stories, and eventually I realized that my story, exactly what I was going through, was here. Like, I did belong here. I did belong here. So I'm going to read a statement, just one statement first, out of book page 417. Oh, I marked it. Okay, so this said, or it says, on page 417, it's the third line down, it says, when I stopped living in the problem and began living in the answer, the problem went away. So, I started steps with my first sponsor, and I kind of, like, I tricked myself, I was tricked into it. The word temporary really resonated with me. I was really, really psyched at the idea of a temporary sponsor, because it wasn't permanent. I could commit to temporary. That's right up my alley. So I started working with her, and then I started working on the steps. I actually started working on the steps before I told her that I started. I was calling her every day. But she told me to start reading the book any way I wanted to. And so I did that, and I got to the part in the book where it talks about step four. And there's that table in there that has resentment and all that listed out. And so I grabbed my notebook and I started writing. and I eventually, after like not long, like 30 minutes or something, I was freaking out in that whole I want to run mode, and I was going to run. But I've been calling her every day for a couple weeks at this point, and so I called her. I told her what was going on. And it was all about other people at first. My roommate did this, and she, like, blah, 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 she said this, I want to, like, I was not okay, and I wanted to, not only did I want to run, I wanted to go get loaded. Like, I was ready to roll, and I had a plan, but she said, all right, hold on, tell me, can you tell me what happened before you started feeling this way? And so eventually, when I calmed down enough to be able to give coherent sentences, it came out that I had started the steps. She didn't know that, and she told me that I wasn't supposed to do it alone. And I didn't know that. I thought I would be fine doing it alone. So that's when I learned that not only are we not supposed to do it alone, like, we really can't do it alone. We don't have to. So in that moment, we started putting dates on the calendar to work the steps. So now I'm working with a temporary sponsor, and I'm working the steps with her. But yeah, that fourth step almost took me out. I want to also add that in my early step work, I took a commitment here. At this club, I started with a co-secretary position, making coffee with Jackie on Saturdays at noon. And that helped keep me on track, because for a while, that heavy stuff of the fourth step was like a lot to handle and to swallow. So sometimes I didn't want to come here, but that Saturday commitment helped me break through those days of like not wanting to show up. And then the feeling that I got from pouring the coffee was like not anything that I felt before. Because I never was into volunteer work when I was young. I wanted to be into volunteer work, but I really never did anything like that. Everything I've ever done's been for money. So I can't recommend enough, even if you are early in your steps and haven't finished it, get a service commitment. That helped me through, and it did something to my brain. It helped my body learn what it feels like to feel good without the drugs and alcohol. It feels good to be of service and to break through that like resistance of not wanting to do it, but showing up anyways, and then feeling good when you leave. There's something to that. Okay, so we are at, so we're at the ninth step. I just want to touch on the ninth step. That I jumped forward, I hear this, it happens a lot, it happened to me. I jumped forward to the ninth step preemptively before I was ready, and I started making amends to my mom, and that was okay. Like, that was a nice moment. But I reached out to someone, a guy, who I really didn't need to be reaching out to. And after talking to my sponsor, he didn't answer. Thank God he didn't answer. So there was never actually a conversation there. But I talked with my first sponsor, and she said, no, this is not someone that you need to do this with. You don't owe him an amend, and you don't want to rekindle this relationship. It's not going to go anywhere. It's better to just leave it alone. So the reason I'm bringing that up is because I did it without talking to my sponsor. So if you're early in your step, don't jump forward without talking to your sponsor. Like, if you're working on four and you really want to make an amends with somebody, at least have the conversation with them before you do anything and see what they have to say. So the 11th step is my favorite. I love this step. I practice it every day now, but it took a while for me to build up to this point of making that conscious contact with God every day. But in retrospect, this was my motivation to get sober in the first place. This is why I wanted sobriety. It's because I was good on meditation before I got here, but I wasn't able to do it without having a mind-altering substance. And so I remember praying for two things. Before I got here, it wasn't even like a prayer, it was more like begging. I was begging God. I was like, God, please help me get sober number one. I just want to be sober as I'm, like, hitting it. Like, I just want to be sober. And number two, I just want to learn to live with people. Can I just learn? Because I was, like, cool by myself. I felt cool by myself as long as I had something. But I couldn't be around people for very long without getting really annoyed and having to bail, like run away. So, really the 11th step to me is what got me here, but now in my sobriety I have clarity when I pray and when I meditate, and I can actually like feel the guidance and then make the next indicated right action and have energy for it. You don't have to wrestle with hangovers anymore. And I can actually do things now. So that's pretty cool. I'm going to go back to the book for a second. This is a really good book. Okay. So... this is page 418. It's about halfway down. And I'm going to read a meaty little chunk of this. I'm going to read 418 to 419. It says, prior to our marriage, when she was a shy, scrawny adolescent, I was able to see things in her that others couldn't necessarily see. Things like beauty, charm, gaiety, a gift for being easy to talk to, a sense of humor, and many other fine qualities. It was as if I had rather a Midas touch, which turned everything to gold, a magnifying mind that magnified whatever it focused on. Over the years, as I thought about Max, her good qualities grew and grew, and we married, and all these qualities became more and more apparent to me, and we were happier and happier. Then I drank more and more. The alcohol seemed to affect my vision. Instead of continuing to see what was good about my wife, I began to see her defects. And the more I focused my mind on her defects, the more they grew and multiplied. Every defect I pointed out to her became greater and greater. Each time I told her she was a nothing, she receded a little more into nowhere. The more I drank, the more she wilted. Then one day in AA, I was told that I had the lenses in my glasses backwards. The courage to change and the serenity prayer meant not that I should change my marriage, but rather that I should change myself and learn to accept my spouse as she was. AA has given me a new pair of glasses. I can again focus on my wife's good qualities and watch them grow and grow and grow. I can do the same thing with an AA meeting. The more I focus my mind on its defects, late start, long drunk logs, cigarette smoke, long-winded speech, the worse the meeting becomes. But when I try to see what I can add to the meeting rather than what I can get out of it, and when I focus my mind on what's good about it rather than what's wrong with it, the meeting keeps getting better and better. When I focus on what's good today, I have a good day. When I focus on what's bad, I have a bad day. I focus on a problem, the problem increases. I focus on the answer increases. I love that passage. And my favorite topic in AA is the magic magnifying mind. My sponsor wanted me to lead, or I did lead the meeting on Friday, and she said, what's your favorite topic? And I said, well, I'm going to talk about that on Sunday. So I picked something different. But like I said, before I got here, I prayed for those two things. That's all I wanted. That's really, I focused my energy on getting sober. I couldn't do it by myself. And on learning to live with people. And since I've gotten here, my prayers have been answered. Like, I have been sober for almost 17 months now. And it doesn't look at all like what I thought it was going to look like. I'm literally a shelter right now with a lot of people and a lot of different personalities, but I've learned to live with people. And it's not always easy, but it's beautiful. But I can do that now, and I'm really thankful for it. So, today, I appreciate living in a place that allows me to grow exponentially more than I could have done by myself, and I couldn't find that when I first got here. All I could find was what was wrong with you. Nope, don't take a person. really clear about something. I think it's really important to emphasize that there is inherent risk associated with going to the shelter, and I'm not recommending it. I don't recommend living at the shelter. But in certain situations, I think it is appropriate, and for me, I've grown a lot there. I did have a year of sobriety before going there, and I see a lot. That's the truth. I see a lot. There was stuff that happened right before I came to this meeting. I was trying to get a little rest in, and there was some drama happening, and I just had to accept that that was what was happening. I put a pillow over my head, some earplugs in, and that helped. sometimes it's peaceful at the shelter, but sometimes it's scary, too. So this place is like a safe haven for me to come to when I'm feeling overwhelmed, when I'm feeling good. This place has made a huge difference, and I don't think I would be able to live at the shelter where I live now if it wasn't for this program. For look at all these people. Like, there's so much love in this room, and I could not have done it without every single one of you. I'm again wanting to emphasize I'm not recommending that anybody move to the shelter, but I do want to express some gratitude for it, but it's there. And it's been a really important part of my growth. I wouldn't have got sober without the shelters. So I think the main point I want to drive home is that going there and living in such a stressful, at times chaotic, at times peaceful too, I have to give it that credit, but unpredictable environment is, I've learned to be okay there. And I know that I'm going to be okay moving forward because I've learned to be okay where I'm at. Also, it's given me a really great opportunity to work Step 10, which my sponsor is very aware of. I have called her many times and had to put dates on the calendar to do Step 10 inventory work just as a function of living at the shelter. So I told someone at one point, the shelter, again, I'm not recommending it, but it's an opportunity for unparalleled growth, and I believe that. So now, okay, I have some time. So I wasn't sure how much time I have, like how long it would take me to get through this stuff, but I want to bring up, and this is switching gears a little bit, I want to bring up the barrel analogy because I hear it often, and so when I was a little girl, the barrel, like it's your turn in the barrel, right? I've heard people say that, it's your turn in the barrel. And when I was little, I remember asking, what's the barrel analogy? Like, what's the barrel? I don't get it. And someone told me that it was about a wine barrel, like a wooden wine barrel. Like, well, it rolls down a hill, and somebody's in it, and they're tumbling inside of it. Has anybody else heard this? Seriously, no? Okay, so this is what I thought coming into this, was that you're like in some barrel and it's something that people do for fun, and it was kind of confusing to me. But about a year before I got here, so about 2 years ago, I started learning to surf. And now, when I hear about this barrel thing, and it only happened when I got here, actually, because I was out, kind of isolated, doing my own thing for that year before I got here. And the barrel analogy now, to me, makes so much sense when I think about the ocean and waves. Because when people say it's your turn in the barrel, it's like, okay, if I'm going to go into a barrel in the ocean, then I want to know that I have the tools and techniques to be able to either ride that wave or to know what to do when I get knocked off of it. Because that's a whole other thing, right? There's like surfing the wave and then there's like getting off of the wave. Because it's not always perfect exit. So somebody asked me when I was in Mexico and I got worked. And I got out of the ocean. I don't know if this guy saw the whole thing or if he just saw how I was walking and like I was just totally defeated. Like I could barely carry the board. And he was like, what did you learn out there? And I hadn't really thought about that at all. All I was thinking is that I was happy to have made it out of that, because it was kind of a big day, and I had no idea, like, that it was a big day. I just went out, because everyone else was going out. So, I was just like, I kind of rattled off some things. I was like, well, make sure your wetsuit fits, because my wetsuit was a little bit too big for me. I had borrowed it, so I had, like, all this water pooled in my wetsuit. It was pretty bad. And, He said, all right, so you're not ready to be riding waves yet. Clearly I'm not. I don't know what he saw, but like, no, I'm not ready for that. But what are you going to do when you get sucked into the washing machine? And that was the first time I heard that. But it did feel like I was in a washing machine when I got sucked in. And that happens. Like, when you get off of a barrel, you have to know how to get off of it. And part of that is wiping out, like, you wipe out to get out of some barrel. And so I thought about that for a little bit, and I was just like, I have no idea. I have no idea where you're going with this. Can you please give me the answer? And he said, you just have to surrender. You just have to let go. You can't, and my sponsor talks about this sometimes in the ocean, like letting yourself go in calm water and like letting the ocean take you. Well, when the waves are big, it's not necessarily like that, but if you try to work against the ocean, you're just going to wear yourself out. You're going to run out of air. And I kind of see an analogy, like, since I hear it come up in meetings, I see a parallel there with, like, recovery. And, like, sometimes we wipe out in life. That's part of life. We can't catch a barrel without knowing how to handle that turbulence when it comes up. So you can either fight against the ocean, wear yourself out, and probably not make it out alive, or you can just surrender and let go. Let the waves pass you, relax, find your conscious contact with God, and let it pass. And then hope that you get up soon enough to be able to dodge the next wave before it comes. So now, after all the meetings that I've been to, and Victor likes to use that one a lot, the barrel analogy, I think of it entirely different these days just because I've been through some turbulence, and that is the answer. Accept it. Like, you just let it go. Let it pass. It's going to happen. You can't fight that. That's life. But that's what makes it so beautiful, is that once you have the tools and the skills to be able to deal with that, you can have a lot of fun out there. It can be a lot of fun. You just surrender when the time is appropriate. So, God bless you. Another thing I wanted to bring up, but I didn't actually write it down here on my list. Oh, I have, like, more that I actually did write. Hold on. I'm going to get through this first before I start bringing other things through. Okay, so this is a cool story. So before I got sober, like I mentioned, I was living in my car. And I like to hike. I like to be in nature. And I remember parking at this place, the trail. And I remember seeing, I was exhausted. So I parked. I was so tired. You have to move a lot when you live in your car. You wake up, you gotta move so people don't see you, you don't get kicked out, and you wanna, like, stay under the radar. Anyways, I parked at this trail somewhere in Central California, and it was morning, and I only was moving there because I had to move, like, the sun was up, I had to move my car so I didn't get in trouble. And I parked totally exhausted, I was definitely smoking already. Because that's, like, how I coped with everything that was going on. And I saw people walking their dogs. I saw people getting on and off the trail. And I hear this in the room often, like, I just didn't get it. I'm like, how can they have the energy to be walking their dogs so early in the morning? I want that for myself, but I clearly, like, I don't even want to get out and walk this trail. Because I got a cloud of smoke in here, and I don't want to draw attention to myself. I don't want people to see that I left my car here and I'm living in it. Like, all these reasons to not go out and enjoy the trail. Anyways, I moved on, went and tried to surf some more, and ended up in the shelter, like I mentioned. I've tried to find that trail many, many times before, just out of curiosity, but I've never been able to find it, and I've looked. But it was interesting, last week, it was like 10 days ago or something, I took a different turn on a trail that I was on. I went a different way, and I was like, is that the thing? And I like walked, and I kind of just like encountered this spot, and I was on a walk. Like, I actually was out early in the morning doing exactly what I wanted to do, you know, a couple years ago. Thank God I'm doing stuff like that now. So, yeah, today I participate in life. I look people in the eye. I know I'm on a solid path and that I'm moving in the right direction. And my favorite part of the whole thing is that I'm not doing it alone. Like, there's so much love here right now, and I could not have done it without all of you. Not only am I not alone, I'm not supposed to do it alone. And sometimes that's hard for me to remember. Sometimes I do want to isolate and run away. And sometimes when people reach out to me that I've drank with before and used with before, it's tempting to want to go and like have that camaraderie. But I have so much support here. And one thing I want to touch on also is the service commitment. I really think the service commitment, like, it's in steps for a reason. It's not just getting to it and being done. It's, like, continuing to be of service is what's keeping me sober. If I hadn't been speaking tonight, who knows? Like, maybe I would have gone and, like, met that guy. And my mind, I've just built this there, my mind did go to a dark place when he reached out. And I had to call my sponsor because in my mind, I, like, bailed on this meeting, and I'm, like, entertaining the worst-case scenario, like, oh, my God, am I going to go get loaded tonight, you know, and, like, miss the meeting? That really happened. So the service commitments really help keep me focused, working with other people, like, helping guide them through the steps and seeing them blossom is a whole, it's like a whole nother thing that I'm just starting, but because I've worked the steps, because I've taken the time to do all the things, even the hard things that I didn't necessarily want to do, I made it. And now I'm like learning to ride the wave, you know, I'm like learning to deal with the turbulence when it comes, and it really is a beautiful thing. It feels really good. Like, that's all we ever wanted, I think, most of us, is just to be able to help people and, like, be there and connect with people and with our Creator. And that's what the steps have given me and continue to give me. So if you're new, keep coming back. Don't stop, even if you want to stop. I've thought about it several times, but my service commitments are what keep me coming back. So, or like in those times, I mean, I come back because look, there's like so much goodness here and the camaraderie is awesome. But the service commitments are what will get you to that point where you break through, and it's not about like making yourself go. Like eventually you want to be here. You want to come. You look forward to the meeting, so like the highlight of the day. My life is totally structured around them right now. I've been Instacarting since October, Uber eating for money, and I'm about ready to like move on to the next thing, but it has been priceless to be able to work in between meetings, to have that kind of control of my schedule, and to be able to be here two or three times, like at least once a day for sure. For the past 4 months, it's been at least once a day. But sometimes it's two times or three times a day. And at first it started a couple times or three times a day, because it was a bad day. But now, it's like two or three times a day, and it's a really good day. And that's happening more and more frequently now, where it's just like lots of good days stacked on top of each other. And that's new for me. So again, if you're new, keep coming back. Get a temporary sponsor. You do not have to marry this person. It does not have to be permanent commitment. Just, even if you're not comfortable calling them a temporary sponsor, find someone who you can call a friend to help guide you through. Someone who's done it before. That's important. Someone who's finished the steps. Someone who has a sponsor. Who has a sponsor. Who has a sponsor. Very important. And get a commitment. That's the last thing I want to say. Like, get a commitment because, like I said, it helps you get through those initial times of not wanting to be here, but then seeing how good it feels to help somebody. So, again, if you're new, buckle up because your life can improve if you just keep coming back one day at a time. That's what I have for you. That's the end of it. I know you still have 5 minutes left. And Brian, oh, I did have that one thing I wanted to tell you. I didn't write it down, though, so I'm trying to, like, remember exactly what it was that I wanted to say. Okay, I remember. So, I used to tutor math. I loved tutoring math. I'm really, really good at teaching people how to solve equations and solve problems. The biggest problem, again, I don't want to focus on problems too much. I wanted to, like, focus on the solution, but the biggest problem that I saw in my 3 years of tutoring math was that people didn't understand the problem. Think about that. They either wrote it down wrong, like they have a book and they wrote the problem down wrong on their paper, or they read the problem wrong and then they just completely solved the wrong problem. So that popped in my head after I had been through all of this, and I was like, wait a minute, this is kind of like step one. Like, if we don't understand what the problem actually is, if we think that it's our depression, I'm triple diagnosis, I have complex PTSD, major depressive disorder, and substance abuse disorder. And so, had I just focused on those, which, by the way, did you know you cannot get to a mental health diagnosis without a few months of sobriety under your belt? So they didn't even see me until I'd been sober for 3 months. So had I just focused on that problem, you know, complex PTSD, depression, I would have missed all of this. So I think it's valuable. I'm not understating the value of a mental health diagnosis whatsoever. It's nice to know when things come up that that's what's going on with me and I can navigate it. It's like a tool, another tool that I have. But knowing that we have a problem and that there's a solution, if we just have somebody to walk us through the process, and more than one person, because every once in a while, my sponsor's not able to answer. It's not often. But every once in a while it happens, and I have had to call like 7 people before on a Friday night late before one of them finally called me back. Thank God she ended up guiding me just the way that my sponsor would have. I told her what happened the next day, and she totally agreed with the guidance that I was given. Anyways, though, you can't just bank your recovery on having one person, your sponsor. You want to make connections. You want to get lots of numbers, connect with lots of people, and make sure that you're solving the right problem, because otherwise, what's the point? And that's it right there. So that's what I have for you. It's just the steps worked for me. They continue to work for me. My name's Tara. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah!